Welcome. I'm going to tell you about Cryptopolis now. It's a really tongue twister. And why the Dutch government is investing in so much in post-quantum cryptography. Because, well, this problem will not appear until many years, right? Well, let's have a talk, and at least we can even have a discussion about it. I'm Oscar Kuro. I have a day job of being a CISO for a ministry of healthcare, welfare, and sports. Not so much sports, at least not for me, but I love sports, at least watching it. This is an unofficial version, so for everybody who is a colleague of mine, directly or indirectly, this is an unsanctioned version of exactly the same problem, but differently presented to you. Because, well, it's going to be a bit of a crypto apocalypse. And I'm going to tell you why this is such a problem, even today. And today, for the record, is 2024. And, let's see why and how. First off, we've got the enemy. The enemy in this case is not just this guy, but the machine on the right. An example, at least a cool cinematic photo of a quantum computer. Now, these quantum computers, we probably know already something about that. They work with qubits. It's a physics game. It's a statistical way of working with computing. You could even say, well, on a physics level, it's even some sort of an analog computer. Very interesting. Very old technology. Analog computers have existed for quite some years, but at least we haven't seen them for many times, unless you look into a museum. But the thing is, if you work with this, they are very good at very specific problems. Not all of the problems can be solved by a quantum computer, but some you can accelerate, some are very interesting to be handled by such a device. Well, I think we all know that part because you've heard this many times ago. But why? And the why is the thing that I'm going to talk about mostly today. So the intelligence agencies of the Netherlands say, well, somewhere between 2030, 2040, it's a bit of a speculation, but that's what they say on the websites, is this is when we expect a significantly interesting cryptographic key to be cracked by a quantum computer because the amount of stable qubits is now possible to actually work with. Now, what the heck is a stable qubit? I've just learned there was something about qubits, and they float between 0 and 1, and only when you look at them, then it appears to be some kind of an answer. Now, that's and how a quantum computer actually is calculating is a physics game. It's going to be very complicated. Will never fit into 42 minutes. So, but the thing is, stable qubits. The thing that we have to look at is not the advertisements of, for example, big tech, either IBM, Google, other parties, in the amount of qubits they can hold into one system. The thing that you have to take care of is the way and the amount of unstable qubits, the amount of qubits you had to create into a device to actually make this thing fly and work, and how many qubits you actually then are left over because you need to work with all the qubits that you have in the system to basically do the statistical analysis on the actual answer. So they're used to, well, if at least you can discard them, you don't work with those other qubits, and you work with the statistical analysis that this is the amount of, well, data that you can crunch, process, and finally you have an answer. And ultimately you then talk about this mythical term, stable qubits. So it's just like to say you have a lot of machinery in your normal CPU. That's all cool, but you actually are calculating with the amount of bits that you actually calculate with. That's the stable qubits. Some machines already claim 100,000 qubits to be working with. Well, that's all nice and cool. One of the ways of dealing with that is that they combine processors they connect with them, and then they use the actual number that they can combine in advertisement. It's interesting. Everybody is wanting to be the first and having the biggest quantum computer, at least first. That's the thing that everybody's aiming for. So there's a lot of scientific papers that actually tell you more about the actual truth on how powerful and how good and how stable an actual computing unit is. That's the magic. And it's in literature, it's typically obvious because, well, in scientific papers, yeah, but in media, qubits and stable qubits are intertwined, and that's an interesting entanglement. The U.S. Department of Homeland states, well, we have a similar idea on the timing. They state, well, somewhere at the end of the 2020 decade. That's interesting. So they don't really call it the 2030. It's more or less the same. And if you look at the French, the Germans, and even the Chinese, more or less everybody is hinting on the same kind of time frame. It's a bit of a gamble because we don't know if everything will accelerate in the same rate today. I mean, science is not a linear thing. If we look at other cool fields like, for example, fusion reactors, I think we've talked about fusion reactors to be viable for many, many decades, over many other decades that they will be viable. It's interesting, but I think the quantum computer will not be that kind of example. I think the quantum computer will actually be in this time frame, 2030, 2040-ish. So what are we dealing with? Well, we all know this protocol. This is an example, an IETF spec TLS 1.3. This is what we use today mostly. Every time when we make a connection, it's a TLS 1.2, 1.3 connection. And this is what we use in our daily lives. And all the systems that we deal with are ultimately the TLS. If you look at the TLS handshake, I always look at it in the four elements that it is composed of. You go to a server, you authenticate, you get a certificate, you have to do all the signature checks. After that, you want to do the encipherment, you need to have key establishment, key exchange, so you exchange keys. So in the key establishment side, you have this one symmetric key that you want to use for the encipherment and the integrity control. Okay, cool. That's what we use. And then the key exchange is also a method, Diffie-Hellman, for example, elliptic curve Diffie-Hellman. This is the technique that we use today to make this work. Obviously, this is just an example on TLS. We have a lot of systems that just use signatures only, or signature-based, or just integrity controls. If you have a PDF, you want to have a signature on that, and you want to have a good signature, that's typically an RSA signature, for example, because the certificate is signature-based element, and now it's signing something with that technology. Cool. But there's a bit of a problem. It's not so much a problem. This guy really had a lot of success, Peter Shor. And he anticipated, well, we can do a search algorithm, sort of. The simple way of dealing with this is a bit of a search algorithm enhancement. If I have a quantum computer, I can do this magical search thing very quickly. So we hide everything in numbers, in big numbers, and we can do the factorization. Well, factorization is hard until you have a possibility of calculating completely differently. And this is his hypothesis. This is the thing that we, well, basically would state everything that we work with now will be compromised, or compromisable, we should say. Because we don't know how fast a computer will actually be. Because how fast will a quantum computer be when this thing exists? Have you ever looked at the idea? Everybody's talking about, oh, a quantum computer will break everything. Cool, but how long would a quantum computer actually work or need to turn on a key to actually make this work? This is something that we don't know yet. Maybe it doesn't take you 200 years, but perhaps 1 year. We can actually do this in nominal time. What definition of nominal time? It's really complicated. So the idea is that you can probably break it now in years, and then ultimately if we get better, into days, and maybe even faster than that. Then there's this guy, Love Grover. And he anticipated, well, we can deal with the cracking of AES, for example, with symmetric keys differently. And some of the algorithms now are chopped in half by power. This is a lot of mathematical work to actually prove that this actually works. I find it really cool to see mathematical theorists work in such a field where there is no quantum computer yet big enough to actually do the actual cracking. But these days, there are a lot of researchers done by the Center for Math and Informatics at Amsterdam, for example. Many PhD students now are doing their thesis and dissertations on actually cracking it and proving it. There are two ways of proving it. One, that it actually works. And the other thing is, of course, if you have a new algorithm, does it actually guard you against a quantum computer? Those are the two math fields that are very popular now to actually see if you can actually make it crack and do the work, or the other way, protect yourself against the problems. So ultimately, we use ECDHE, elliptic curve Diffie-Hellman ephemeral, RSA, for example, for the key exchange work to make the public keys actually work with or be signed, the authenticity being signed, and progress in and connect to the AES keys. It's always an interesting mix on how this actually works if you look at all the proofs. TLS is a pretty complex piece of work if you look at all the details on how this actually works in milliseconds these days. But yeah, the problem is this is being busted, the other one is busted, the other one is chopped in half. Hashing is interesting. Some people would say the hashing algorithms are also busted in half based on the Grover algorithm. But it's not really sure if that is the actual truth. There are many scientists now being working on the integrity controls and on all the values. On it seem to look at it would probably be cracked or at least be halved in power, just like the AES part. But this is still up until now it's a big debate on what the actual effects will be for hashing. So where's Bitcoins? That's going to be a cool thing, of course. Like, what would it do on those kinds of Bitcoin markets if you can also crack and turn on Bitcoins in a very different way? It's going to be an interesting thing. Now, this is just TLS now, but I don't just always think about just TLS, but also just the hashing algorithms, signatures. Where do we use digital signatures? Well, in banking and so on, your banking cards. All these systems are being affected here. Now, the estimation, I already talked about it a bit. The estimation is, it's complicated. So it's a bit of a likelihood on one, when do we see all these companies, all these superpowers deal with a big enough quantum computer to be an actual threat? Well, it's interesting. It's not really interesting to tell, but ultimately everybody would think, well, in about 30 years, this is going to be a very high threat. So let's figure out that it probably will be somewhere between the 10 and the 20 years. This is guesstimated on the RSA 2048 bit certificate signature sizes. But yeah, the problem is, of course, what will happen? Perhaps some company makes an interesting leap. Perhaps an intelligence agency makes an interesting leap. We don't know. Now, there are systems and out there, just dashboards created by scientists to figure out how the progression is of all the teams that are dealing with quantum computers. Now, this dashboard is very interesting and valuable. And this is something that will probably be published ultimately. To see all the progress you need to read all the scientific papers out there on quantum developments. Have you ever read one of those? Have you ever tried reading one of those? I typically read the intro and the conclusion. And then in the middle, I see, well, is it going to be truthful? Probably. I see the authors. I look at the professors. And typically, I figure out, well, if this is somebody promoted by Ronald Kramer, for example, then I have a good feeling that this is being checked by people that are a lot smarter than me. So this is how I try to quickly get a bit of a guesstimate, but there are thousands of these documents. How do you then know where we are? And you could say the intelligence agencies never publish what they do, but they need the same science as the rest of the world needs to make progressions. So if you know, and well, you could basically anticipate that everybody has to make the same leaps, the same jumps, the same choices, the same problems to overcome. Because if you want to deal with stable qubits, this is really complicated. Everybody is dealing with the same kind of issues. You can then guesstimate that even intelligence agencies probably won't be able to leap ahead many years, but just a few years at maximum. That basically gives me a bit of a relaxation feeling, sort of. Like, okay, we don't need to be able to worry so much about intelligence agencies not telling us what they're actually cooking up in their laboratories, because everybody is basically stuck on the same problems. It's just like fusion. Everybody's stuck on the same kind of issues. In a fusion reactor, the reactor is getting too hot because the material is then creating plasma warps in the fusion reaction itself. We have the same kind of issue here. The qubits will not be stable if you are adding many, many qubits. If you have 1,000 qubits, you could basically have a feeling like, okay, or basically an idea, like what if you have one marble here? Well, you can basically wiggle it around, right? One marble to keep it stable. Ooh. Keep it into one place. But what if I have two? What if I have four? What if I have 10? What if I have 1,000? How do you keep them all on the same table? This is complicated. Everybody has the same physics issues. But if we want to progress into a safer world where we don't have to be bothered by it, one of the things that we have to deal with is create the new and introduce the new cryptographic solutions. So we probably know already about the NIST races on creating new cryptographic methods. And this is something that is being, well, stabilizing now. And we know what we're going to implement soon. But you have to create those protocols, or at least those technology, you have to embed that into the protocols that we use. We have to create a new version, perhaps, of TLS, version 1.4, 2.0, who knows what the actual naming will be. But you need to create a new version for that, because the keys are going to be different. There will be new ideas on how to deal with new cipher suites. That's something that we have to standardize on. And you see a lot of products these days not caring that much about standardization, because if you have an enclosed environment, for example, if you have information within your own company, your own organization, or just your state, whatever, if you have state secrets, for example, or if you have a company, you can basically take some kind of organization, some kind of system that somebody is creating with the new, coolest, and post-quantum safe algorithms in it. And with that system, it doesn't have to talk to anything else. It will just be a peer-to-peer connection, or just some connections that have to talk to each other, and that's it. If you have such an environment, a closed environment, just a few peers, then it's going to be very easy to adopt and implement it. But you don't have to deal with standardization, because you don't have to talk to any other system whatsoever in that ecosystem. That's the easy part. Standardization, if we don't know yet with which systems we need to interact later, well, then we need to ultimately work with standardization. So this will hold us back until that stage is being settled and we have the new protocols. After that, hardware and software need to be adopting those. As you know, Intel, AMD, IBM, CPUs, even Qualcomm, they all use accelerators in the hardware itself, and they need to be adopted for the new protocol standards. New protocol standards, new methods, and only when that is being dealt with and you have this into your software, you can actually use it. After that, for a lot of organizations, it's important that you standardize on this, that you can tell to auditors that this is being certified and certifiable, so you have to think about new certification schemes. And after certification schemes comes the actual certification. And the cool part is of certification, well, one of the things that I anticipate is that your hardware security modules, the digital safes that you could use in your environment for PKI and whatever, that they need to be recertified for the new protocols. This is something that is already known. But if you have the new protocols but they're not standardized, well, you can't really put any certification scheme on it yet. So we have to figure out that the cryptographic choices are being stabilized, then the protocols, and then you can deal with the certification of complex devices like HSMs. Now, how many relevant certification bodies do you think we have? More than 10? Raise your hands for more than 10 certification bodies. Okay. More than 5? The actual answer is, of course, well, if you look at the certifications of that, we actually have multiple organizations, 10, 20 organizations that actually do this on a global scale, but they're aligned to FIPS, for example, and common criteria. So the amount of bodies that you have to actually do this is very low. You only have a few around the planet, and everybody is probably offering their HSMs, their new Intel processors and whatever to be certified in one go. Because if this is being certification scheme is being settled on a global scale, that'll be the moment that everybody wants to offer their hardware and software to be certified. Ta-da! And we're DDoSing the systems, or in this case, the certification bodies. So how long will this take, even just this stage? Well, we're still dealing with cryptographic choices stabilization. The protocols, at least the RPKI team, for example, at the IETF stated last year, well, the heck with it. We're going to wait until TLS first is dealing with all these situations, and then we will progress. Then it will be moving into RPKI. The hardware and software guys are probably already dealing with this, so there is already hardware and software, but it cannot be certified, so they're stuck on that end. And after that, then we have migrations. Only recently they've thought of an idea on how to deal with DNSSEC, for example. Well, DNSSEC is an interesting one. All the keys are getting larger. It will not fit into one Ethernet frame anymore. So you need to fragment. And if you fragment DNS, it will move from UDP to TCP. So all your DNS will now be quantum safe, but everything moves to TCP again. Oh shit, what will happen with all the interactions on the internet and your phone and whatever? Well, this will be a bad experience to users. So they figured out, well, we can create smaller keys which are quantum safe, and it will fit in the frame barely, just only. Don't add too much extra flags and it will fit in the frame. So these are other practical problems. And then we have the global PKI issue. How do we deal with a global system with millions of certificates, and we all need to progress into an interesting way? And the millions are just the published ones. We don't know how much within all the organizations are internally. And there will be many other interesting challenges so far. But each of these layers takes years to actually figure out until we can actually start building software and certifying it and then installing it and updating infrastructures. We will work with new protocol, new technology in the protocols. Crystal Kyber, this is one of the experiments that were also being done by Firefox and Chrome, the nightly builds and the Canary version. For example, working with new certificates is very interesting. So where we had to deal with elliptic curve, for example, or RSA signed certificates. Now we have to deal with crystal dilithium or Sphinx Plus. I think the world is going to use dilithium. And this is going to be also very interesting. All kinds of names, which not everybody is familiar with yet. Because where the heck is RSA? Well, that's gone. It's out the window. Now, what is the things that I want to tell everybody about RSA? One, well, RSA has issues. I concur with discussions that I had with Mendel and Anion earlier about RSA and all the risks in RSA. So get the heck away from RSA. That's one thing. But the other problem is, when did we introduce RSA? '80s, if the people who, so for some people, Netscape is a very, very starting point of their internet and digital life. For other people, it went before that. So systems and Unix, VUX systems already had the first implementations of RSA in a closed environment. This went open in a Netscape time and era, in the first SSL version 2.0. Ultimate after that to 3.0 and then TLS. So this is mid-90s when it took off, mid-90s. The only thing that we did with RSA was increase the key size. Now we're going to ditch it for the first time ever in 30 years. Now, progressing into a new technology is one thing. Trying to ditch it and carve it out of your infrastructure, that's a total new ballgame. We haven't done that before in any time before. We only added the key sizes, 512, 1024, 2048, 4096. I'm going for 8196. No, we're going to probably ditch it before that, because it's pretty much a bitch to actually deal with those kinds of RSA key sizes. So we're going to work with new technology. One of the coolest projects that we have in the Netherlands is Hapkido, at least to me, is they focus solely on the problem of changing public key infrastructure. Hybrid approach for quantum safe public key infrastructures developed for organizations, Hapkido. It's of course a backronym, but this is being dealt with by a lot of companies, and TNO is heavily investing in here, and some other organizations. And one of the ideas that they have is, well, what if your certificate doesn't just have one key, but has two good keys, two public keys to deal with, an old one and a new signature. So two signatures, two public keys. It's a cool idea. Problem is, naive programming in the last 30 years. It's always, so whoever had hands up, who not just who knows ASN1, who has seen ASN1 on the command line. So few hands, not that many. So in a world before XML, there was something called ASN1, and we still use it in formatting certificates. Now, if you are in the automotive industry, then you can actually see new formats of a certificate, same data, differently formatted, but ASN1 is what we do. It's a bit of a coordination system. You have a coordinate, and after that, it's sliced off, a switch. You switch off to a new branch, and then this is where your data is. You can get the value of that coordinate. So in code, you basically program the coordinate where your first public key is, and that's what you grab, and that's what you get, that's what you use. The concept of having two of these is in the standard since the beginning, but nobody used it. So why would you ever program for that effect to be usable? Then again, the certificates will of course grow in size as well. What does your software do with that? What does your ESP01 do with that? What's in here, by the way, Anion? What kind of CPU is here? ESP32. There's not that much memory in this device. So what will such a device, such software stack, AXTLS perhaps, what will that do? An embedded software stack, what will that do with this? Or your Python, MPython, for example. Very interesting. So we don't know what this effect will be. Then again, this is just one problem, because PKI is more or less this. It's not just this one certificate and one CA. What you're reading here is a European Commission wanting to deal with those things as well. You have ministries that want to have to deal with this. This is just one chain. This is just the old PKI overhead thing that you want to deal with. So you have multiple intermediate CAs, you have users, you have trusted trust service providers, and everybody needs to upgrade this ecosystem with certified hardware that we know is going to be scarce in the next few years. It's really complicated. And if we take an example, for example, of like Cloudflare is taking quite some leaps here and just trying it in the wild, which is cool. And here you see, for example, the first tries of having two separate secrets, a KEX, a X25519, and a CHEM key encapsulation solution, a Kyber key, and see if that can exchange through their infrastructure. So on the left side, you have the browser, a Chrome Canary, and on the right side, Cloudflare's infrastructure. This is what they did, and they sent two types of keys in the same client hello. Well, this created yet another new protocol issue. If you use Kyber 768, it's big enough to actually fragment your client hello message. Now, if we look at TLS, it has many record types, the alert message, the client hello, server acknowledge, blah, blah, key exchange over key decipherment, message record types. And it's already for many years, and this is the TLS 1.3, but it's also in older TLS or in older RFCs, you can fragment records. It's okay. You could do it. Problem is, that kind of crashed part of the infrastructure of Cloudflare itself in 2019. Misbehaving middle boxes. So you have the outer layer of Cloudflare, which is Nginx, in their flavor of Nginx, whatever it's called. And then you have middle boxes, and then that is basically their load balance environment globally to actually get the data from your client, forward it over the infrastructure to your wherever your client needs to go, wherever your actual website is, the actual data. Now, the middle boxes dropped the client hello fragments when they had to fragment these messages. It's very interesting. Like, why is this not working? It should work. The front office is actually, the front side is actually doing its work, but it's crashing it. And if you have many other keys, even a smaller key, so Kyber is an example of a change over from elliptic curve Diffie-Hellman. So Kyber will be in that space. But if you want to do this, yeah, you still have a big enough thing that it needs to fragment over this one record. It never had to deal with this situation since the beginning of time, since the beginning of the implementation of TLS and the client hello, because they were always small enough to fit into one Ethernet frame. Interesting interactions. We have to deal with these new situations that we've never seen before. It's in the protocol spec. Everybody should have been protocol specific. Oh shit, there are many, many talks on hacker camps telling you about why this is being a problem, that not everybody implements the protocol to the actual letter of the spec. So this transition is going to be horrible, because there are so many interactions and so many systems that are connected to each other in just your private home, even. And after that, of course, your business and your huge infrastructure. So if you're responsible for a large infrastructure, it's not always really clear in what systems are actually interacting with each other and how they will deal with this legacy, not legacy infrastructure. And I think this is going to be a really tough one, because if you look at the infrastructures, we have to deal with different key sizes and types of keys. But everybody now had to work with RSA keys, and I know a lot of infrastructures said, well, elliptic curve, you hipsters, skip the elliptic curve, it's complicated, we already have to deal with RSA, this is already complicated enough, And now this entire infrastructure is now being transitioned to this. Now, there are, of course, solutions. You can have a reverse proxy with the new protocols and the older protocols, so you will never have this mixation. That's one of the solutions. One of the options is the Hapkido solution. One of the other things, this is also why Cloudflare is starting with experiments right now, is to just see real-world interactions, because this is what we need. We need more experiments. And then is the thing, okay, but when do I need to start? When does this stuff become interesting to my organization? Now, in the publication of TNO, CWI, and the AIVD, they mentioned these figures and this planning. So the idea is that you have to figure out, okay, when does all, how long should you, yeah, take care about the secrecy of the data? And then you can basically calculate, well, when does X, the time the asset must remain secure, how long does it take to actually do the migration, estimate the waiting time until certain milestones are being implemented for you in the scenario, and ultimately Z, okay, how much time is left until the actual computer is then out there big enough. Well, if you add all these X, Y, and W together, and this exceeds the Z value, you're in deep shit. Yeah. Yeah, should it be the time when it is available for my adversaries? Yeah, that's true. But we don't really know when they have it, so we do the guesstimation work. Yeah, it definitely depends on your threat model, yes. So it depends on your threat model. So this is also basically putting you into the, well, probably hitting you into the first scenario. For some people, you're in the first one. And this is when companies or institutions make a choice, the heck with it, we're going to migrate to something very specific and non-standard. Or can you actually wait it out and do the standardization work? And I must say, to make it extremely expensive, migrate now, and you're stuck, because then you can do a second migration when everything is standardized and everybody's then hating you because you took something really non-standard. So for the most organizations around the planet, my advice is wait until the standardization stuff is done and then progress already. And what you can also do now is figure out, where the hell did you actually put in your cryptography stuff? Where do I use keys? Yeah, the TLS handshake of my web servers. No. On the inside of your infrastructure. Where in your financial system? Where on the inside of your Oracle, SAP, Microsoft, Linux boxes? Where in the inside of the infrastructure do you use digital signatures? It's going to be a lot more than you think. Even Active Directory, for example. Yeah, so it's very hard for already to implement elliptic curve, and even that doesn't work. Yeah, also one of the naive things, I'm here in person, so I would say, well, one of the hateful things that I've written is that there are some specific protocols written in law, for example, which is also not really helping progress us into a future of different cryptography technology. This is being addressed, but, well, not today yet, but people know about this problem. So yeah, this brings us basically to the end. Like, okay, cool. At least the Dutch government made a decision. Well, even last year, they already started with a project. Like, we need to start, at least they need to start somewhere. I'm going to say they in this case. They need to start somewhere. And they've started this quantum veilige communicatie, quantum veilige cryptografie voor de Rijksoverheid. Quantum safe cryptography for government, or at least central government. The NSA stated, well, it's all nice and dandy, but we have another risk. We have a large infrastructure ourselves, and we need to have an adoption deadline stated in 2030, and there's another window of deadline, which is 2035, then it needs to be done with the migration itself. And this is being signed by, this was already last year, signed by the President Biden, if it wasn't the year before. Anyway, somewhere last 2 years was signed by Biden when he was in office. So they have a huge task, because I talked to some of those guys at the US side. They said, yeah, that's going to be a pain. Because how do you migrate an aircraft carrier into post-quantum realm? This is going to be a very interesting one. So I'd like to leave you with this. I think this transition will be a high chance of looking at a Y2K issue, the thing that we've dealt with, Y2K effect, which is basically boiling down to, it's going to be something that we must do. It's going to be terrible complicated to actually pull off, and nobody will ever know that we've ever done it, nor appreciate it. Thank you. Not sure when the next talk is, but otherwise... Dinner time! I'm out, bye. It's actually on the 42, yeah. Oh my gosh, I actually made it. That's it? Okay, thank you. More questions? Any questions, perhaps? I don't know. Just one question for them. Talking to the mic.
Thank you for the talk, Oscar. Very good talk. The 2035, isn't that a bit naive, considering that other nations think it's sooner? And also, you focus mostly on the data in transit. But what if you capture that now and decrypt it later? I mean, if you then have a deadline for 2035, I mean, probably this is already going on, right?
Yeah. So the thing that I've completely avoided in talking is one of the things that I assumed a bit that we knew, which is the store now, decrypt later problem. I think Snowden said it best in 2013-ish, which is that everything is being tapped and being collected anyway. So let's assume that this effect is not just something that is being organized by the Americans, but it's probably being organized by the Russians and the Chinese, and oh shit, we have 160 other intelligence agencies. So probably some kind of more people are doing this. So let's assume this just this happens. This is a bit of a given, that store now and decrypt later is a thing. It's also being something that probably is being done already. Since the Snowden leaks, it gave us a bit of a hint. Like, this is not just hypothetical. People are actually doing this shit. So yeah, is this naive to have the 35 mark on it? Well, the idea of the 35 or 2035 is that they are done with the entire migration of the infrastructure. Was your problem already there today? Yeah. So some of the secrets is probably not being transmitted over the wire. This is one of the rules and regulations that are publicly known, that if you're going into the highest state secret areas, then you cannot communicate it over the wire unless it is a very closed environment. Yeah. These rules and regulations are public even. So this is what you can already do, and this is what already is being done for the higher state secrets. And for the lower state secrets, well, this is, well, one of the other problems that they have, all the line communication.
But on a government level, are we then not also already preparing for that, saying like, okay, let's not transmit this now anymore, because it could be
captured? Yeah. Okay. But this is something that they've done for 40 years already. So the state secret and how you deal with that is something that is, if you are in the highest class of state secrets, you cannot put it on the wire. And we now actually have public proof since Snowden that this is actually being a problem, and this is why. So yeah, and I think this new era of quantum computing brings us beautiful things, but also these risks now being known, and everybody will now be able to actually see it. Perhaps even in 20 years, do it yourself. 30 years at home? Quantum computer at home? 30 years? 40 years? Well, who knows? Need to convince my wife, probably. Sorry, honey.
Cool. Thanks.
Thank you, Oscar, for the talk. There's some other interesting thing about this. Has there been any thought on legislation on signatures which are now being made by, for example, an RSA key, which, well, will then be broken in some years' time, so we can actually post date signatures? That's something also interesting to look into.
Can you elaborate on this? Because I think I could answer two ways, but
so you have a signed document now, which is legally bound to a digital signature, and in a few years' time, this algorithm will be broken, so you can actually figure it.
Then that basically void
fiddle with this
void
fake history.
Yeah.
So there needs to be some legislation on this.
It probably is, but I don't know it. Huh. I will definitely ask that to some of the teams.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other part about HSMs, there is actually something going on right now already, like because it's a rolling certification. There are vendors that are actually already working in this area.
Yeah, I've seen. You can actually get the soft HSMs or the software versions. Yeah. For example, I know Entrust and Utimaco have software versions that have all the protocols implemented, which is nice because then you can start doing the first interactions with new types of keys. But it's not certified yet, so it will not be implemented, and then you get the cascading effect. Like for example, if you take DigiD. Just an example of an identity provider from the government. Well, you've DigiD, then you've got a system behind that, and you have the municipalities, and there's a quite a deep chain. And you have to figure out that everything has, well, it requires certified building blocks. So the problem of the entire changeover will only happen, well, theoretical in tests. So this is one of the things why the government also has this project to do a testing lab environment and actually build a data center testing environment. This is part of the QVC Rijk problem to have a playground to see how interactions will actually work. I think this is also one of the first projects where the Dutch government could actually have something discovered because they're motivated, and having it firstly motivated instead of saying, well, let's wait for commercial vendors to figure this shit out. No, I think we government can now finally teach something to commercial vendors. Like, this is the experience we already had.
Yeah, be proactive.
In the lab.
Yeah. And you can also play with the algorithms already yourself. For example, OpenSSL has already some implementations, reference implementations. So if anyone wants to experiment, you already can.
Yeah, the software is out there.
Yeah.
Model Scully, truth is out there. Okay, I think this is it. Dinner time. Thank you all.